This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control. Delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Welcome to Trapping Across America, which is on TrappingRadio2.com. This is your host, Clint Locklear, and we're going to be answering some questions on trapping. It'll be pretty diverse on this, and then we're going to get into a little bit of, I'm going to put on my little tweed coat and my little tweed jacket, and I'm going to play kind of like a version of Dr. Phil, but with a little bit more hair and a grizzly white beard. So that'll be towards the end of the show, and what we're going to be talking about is how did you actually enjoy trapping and kind of think a little bit about yourself so you can understand your motives enough that you can actually get everything you can that you want to get out of trapping, and not confusing the marketing and all the other stimulus that comes in about trapping. I think you'll find it pretty interesting. It's an off-the-wall topic for a trapping show. But if you're really listening to that, guys, and be honest and open with yourself, and you know, you'll probably have to be honest and open with yourself when you're like in a locked dock closet, because all of the you know, ebb and flows of what, you know, trappers, outdoorsmen and stuff like that think about themselves, they get very uncomfortable when they have to think about such things. But it make a world of difference when it comes to your trapping. That way you can get the most out of your trapping that you can. But before we get into that, I want to answer a question. This is from, I believe it's from Mitchell. And I recently purchased your DVD, Dirt Holes Beyond the Basics, as a beginner trapper. It's very informative. Thank you. Have a couple of questions. In the video, you made your sets wearing gloves. Is it necessary to wear rubber gloves for scent control when making sets for coyotes, or just gloves in general? Well, this is one of those that kind of fall under what you want it to be more than anything else. I'm not sure it makes really that big a difference one way or the other. I wish that I could say unequivocally I can pronounce on today's date and, you know, in the year of our Lord, something AD, that this is the way that it is and it's a fact. And I can't do that. I can only give you my personal experience when it comes to this. I have trapped in rubber gloves. Most of the time when I've tried to do that, it's been like really, really sloppy, muddy, and cold. And I end up almost catching myself because the rubber gets slick and you know, you can't really feel the things. And your fingers on the end, you're trying to set your dog and stuff and set your pan, and it's all getting pinched and everything. So it just doesn't seem very practical to me, but I'm sure there's gloves out there that you could do this with. But more when I've tried it, it's been more for just trying to keep stuff dry, so I'm more comfortable when I'm trapping. When I use gloves, it's almost always going to be leather. And I just wear them till they wear out. Literally till my fingers are coming through is when I get a new pair of them. Now, I'm not working on a vehicle with these, you know, I'm not going out and, you know, eating hamburgers and cheeseburgers and, you know, doing stuff like that to just get an obscene amount of scent on the leather gloves. I'm not doing that, but I'm not being very phobic about it either. You know, if I'm doing something, I need to wire something off on the trailer and the wire's going to be all greasy, I'll take it and you know, I'll cut the wire and wrap it what I need to secure whatever. And then there'll be a little bit of grease on the gloves. I don't really worry about it. I do it more for the protection of thorns and all the crap when you get down on a set, especially in the South, really especially when you get in the Southwest where everything's got teeth thorns and wants to make you bleed. The gloves are more of a protection thing for me. I have caught a lot of coyotes with bare hands in the summer. Hey, I'm a fat guy. I'm in the South. If I'm doing predator control work, adding a layer of anything on seems impossible. If I thought I could get away with it and not end up in jail, I'd probably be known as the summertime nudist predator trapper. I don't like the heat, even though I live down here, so that couple of months we get down here that's really smoking, I'm not gonna add anything that's gonna keep it in. So, even in the winter, you know, in the summer, I won't even use gloves. And it doesn't seem to really matter. But here's the thing. If you think it matters, you need to wear rubber gloves. You know, if something happens on your line that you're observing something, it may make a difference. I will tell you from guys that trap wolves that certain people have certain odors that certain animals do not like. And what I mean by that, when you talk to guys that, you know, do the wolf control for the government and you get sitting around your, you know, around a campfire with them or something and you're drinking beer and you're just kind of talking trapping, a subject will come up a lot of times where you may have a very competent trapper and this has even happened where I've talked to guys that do coyotes. A very competent trapper that catches a lot of coyotes, but he gets an area and there's just one or two that he cannot catch. No matter what he does, he does not catch. Now, either the coyotes have figured out his odor, which is very different than blindsiding a coyote on just fur trapping. But if a coyote figures out that the odor is after him and trying to trick him, see, now we're in a whole different ball game when it comes to this. And what they will do, this, you know, the USDA or guys inside the USDA that really know the deal, they'll say, hey, why don't you come over and set these traps? And most of the time, that particular animal will get caught very, very quickly because the human odor of that particular person, for whatever that reason is no longer in the equation. But it's not just human scent, it's that human scent. And I think a lot of it just has to do with they're associating that human scent with something else. Because I really believe we smell different to animals. Every one of us smell very different to animals than we think we do. You know, so I wear them for protection. You can wear rubber. I think it's fine. If it makes you feel better and you have more confidence, I say wear them. If you want to go barehanded because you just don't like gloves, you know, don't go down and eat a big old bucket of KFC fried chicken and have grease smeared all over your hands when you're dealing with a trap, you know, because you don't want food smells and stuff like that in your dirt and on your trap and everything where the kill area is, or you will have trouble. So, you know, just kind of keep that in mind. The next question is, I'm from Kansas. What do you recommend to keep in your trap from freezing up? I've heard one person recommend stock salt mixed in dirt. Now, I'm not a rancher by any stretch of the imaginations, but I think I know what you're talking about. If it's kind of a brownish tan color and it's got chunks of salt in it where it's almost not quite as big but almost like the rock salt. I was doing a predator job down in South Carolina and all of a sudden we had a massive cold front come in. It was very wet. And we were really having trouble keeping stuff working. And the landowner, you know, we were like, we need to run to town and get some salt. We weren't close to any type of town. He goes, well, we've got this old stuff up in the barn. And it was like minerals mixed in with the salt is what I think the coloring was. So it's probably what you're talking about. And we used it and had no problem. Now, that brings up an interesting question. You always hear if you use salt, you'll have deer problems. We're on a deer place using this with minerals and didn't have deer problems. So that kind of leads me to believe that since animals kind of listen to their body more than we do, the salt and the minerals, they need more when they're sweating and it's summer and they're putting on growth and they're putting on antlers and stuff like that, that maybe the salt thing with the deer is more of a myth than people want to believe, just from my own personal experience. But it was very interesting. If that's what you're talking about, I don't think you're going to have any problem. I don't know about what that's going to do with cattle. There was no cattle on this place and there was no sheep on this place. But the deer, it didn't seem to make a difference, and it sure didn't make a difference to the coyotes. Now, what do I recommend for your traps not to freeze up? First and foremost, the rule is have something dry to start with. And a lot of times you can just carry dry dirt. If you're not getting freezing and thawing and the ground is staying real muddy, you can just use plain dry dirt. And if it gets 55 below zero, dry dirt can't freeze. And you can find that under bridges or under stumps and stuff like that. Sift it out, make sure it's dry. Go, you know, you can put it somewhere, let it dry out more. You can do that. You can put peat moss in the bottom of the bed so it can't stick to the ground underneath it as easy. And then you can kind of put some dirt and layer the peat moss in around everything. It's not the most stable when you do that, but it can handle some pretty cold temperatures. If the temperature is not going to be below 15, 18 degrees, you can always use a mixture of either glycerin or glycol. And you do this mixture, say, you know, 40% water or urine to glycol. And then you can just spray that on top of the ground. And it's an antifreeze, basically, is what it is. You know, I don't use any propylene glycol in my lures, but I know some guys do as an antifreeze. And glycerin's kind of the same thing. And so what it's basically doing is you're pouring a version of a car antifreeze without all the funky odors they put in there so people don't drink it, you know, and it just keeps the soil from freezing up on you. But when it gets below, like 15 degrees, and you go below that, it doesn't work unless you really bring up the mixture of, you know, almost where it's, you know, 80% glycerin and 20% water, and then you spray that down and you got a muddy mess to begin with. It may not freeze, but you're going to have issues with that. And then you fall into wax dirt, which if you want to make that or buy that, you can. You know, it doesn't freeze. It's dry to begin with. It's a very good product. That's one way to go. If you're going to be using it a lot, you need to be making it yourself, because it'll get very expensive otherwise. And then, you know, you just have basic salt. And that's what I kind of go to. When we get below 15 degrees around here, I go to the dollar store and I will buy a whole buggy full of just plain iodized salt in the little tubes. And it looks to me, I don't know, it looks to be about a quart size. I can get it for 29, 30 cents. It's got the neat little funnel thing on top. So I'm putting the trap in, I dig out my trap bed, I get my loose dirt in the bottom, I sprinkle some of it in the bottom, I will put the trap, bed the trap, put a little bit around that, then I will cover the trap and sprinkle some, not just on the trap, but around on the trap and around the trap, so there's not like a sweet spot, you know, because it will look different than everything else. And that's kind of what I do. So there's a lot of options you can do to antifreeze, and all of them have advantages and disadvantages, especially with the salt. You're going to have to really stay up on how you treat your traps, or it'll eat them. It'll just rust them to pieces and stuff like that. And even if you're doing a very good job of keeping them up, when you pull those traps, really, really wash them off, or that the residue salt will keep eating the metal, and you're going to be losing your investment that you had in that trap. Now, since I'm trapping in Kansas, wait a minute, that's what the one we just answered. Currently, I'm using MB550s, but I'm still not sure how deep or how much dirt to cover the trap. I made a set similar to yours on the DVD with trap being about 12 inches from hole, and had tracks literally all the way around the trap, including the front of my trap at the front of the hole. Let's see, including the trap at the front of the hole, but not in the trap. It was pretty much a flat set, no depression, no mounds around the trap. Any thoughts? I've attached a picture. What you showed me is a great trap bed. I mean, a set. You know, it's, I don't see anything wrong with your set at all. And I wouldn't really change anything at all. Now, I will say that if, you know, you had traps in front of and behind. So basically what happened is nothing was avoiding your trap. They just didn't step in it. And that's the reality of dealing with animals. The only way you're going to get around from that is in front of that trap and around that trap, you start putting in extra traps, and you could take it to the point where you got jaws touching jaws, and it's just a mesh of coil springs and law springs. So when they come up to that hole, there's absolutely no way they can miss it. But if you go that far, you know, you're kind of missing the boat a little bit on getting any amount of traps out, because you'll spend half a day on one set doing that. But, you know, you have a miss at a set, that's just trapping. You know, I know that people think that you can look at something like that and reason something out of that and learn something from that. But what I've learned over all these years of trapping is that's just trapping. If you would have had your trap 6 inches from the hole, 9 inches from the hole, or anything like that, there's just as big a chance that you would see that anyway. You know, and that's just the reality of it. You know, if it was, you know, it wasn't dug up, it wasn't flipped out, it wasn't anything like, they just didn't step where you wanted them to step. Now see, that trap has no magical pulling powers to a paw to get it to where you want. It's just what it is, you know. So, and the other question, how much dirt should I put over the pan? I'm from the old school when it comes to this, and it comes from a lot of the guys that I learned from. The minimum, you know, when I first got into this, and since you're a new trapper,
and these guys really aren't online. You're not going to have any idea who I'm talking about. But between O'Gorman and Slim Peterson, which were actually, they're both alive and probably, you know, some of the most amazing trappers in our modern day, they both believed and still do a half inch to three quarters inch over the trap. And when you first start trapping, that seems like it's way too much. If you think it's way too much, after you put a half inch of dirt over there, even three quarters on something as small as a 550, stick your finger in there and see what happens. It will catch you. So it's not that the trap needs it. What it does is it covers a lot of sins on bedding and the wind and rain and everything else, and it's more solid when you do it that way. And when you have a light coating of dirt, which I see a lot of people do, is they'll put like, I mean, it's not even a quarter inch. It's like a 16th of an inch of dirt, barely covering anything, any type of wind, any type of leaves. The animal steps, he's feeling something hard if he's on a jaw because it's so thin. When you have a half inch of dirt, it all feels the same. So when I say it covers a lot of sins, that's what I'm talking about. And if your trap does get a little more dirty than you would like, it's also under a half inch of organic matter. And all organic matter actually absorbs odor. So, you know, that'll really help you out that way. So I would say a half inch, you know, and if you're not really sure what a half inch is, you know, pull out a tape measure and see what it is. And then go out and just make five or six sets in your backyard or whatever until you can figure out the depth of the trap with the half inch over top. And once you kind of get some muscle memory, you can really go. Now, the fourth question on here is, what is the purpose behind peat moss when covering your trap? Peat moss, to me, is just one of the many ways you could use screen or wax paper or coffee filters or shop towels. I've used them all, and they all work. But the peat moss, to me, is a faster way that I can get a trap set. So when I bed that trap and I can just take a handful of peat moss and put it right on top of the trap and kind of spread it out, all that peat moss is doing is not letting dirt and soil and rocks and sticks get under the pan. That's all it's for on my system. There's really nothing else to it except for that. And it's not for freezing, it's not for anything. I use the same thing most of the time in summer. Now, the only time I get away from the peat moss, if I'm around a lot of gray fox, they will feel that somehow they'll know the peat's there and they start screwing around with the trap. Then I will go to something like wax paper or really thick shop towel, and I will pack in between the jaws all the way up to the pan with that on there, and that kind of fixes it for me with the gray fox. But all it is just to keep stuff from being under your pan. Now, these are great questions, and I appreciate you sending them in. Because there's probably a lot of people that have questions just like this. And that's the reason I like answering questions on here. So I'm going to get back to the next question, which to me is going to somewhat in a kind of way lead in to the next question. Or the big part of the night show. So I'm pulling this up. Okay, this is from Daniel. Dear Clint, I've trapped bobcats before, but plan to try in northern Missouri next summer, next winter 2016. Presently building cubbies ahead of season, so as not have to do it later. Any suggestions on the cubby method? I cut down 2 and 3 inch diameter poles, about 18 to 22 inches long. Fresh cut so it lasts longer, and I use wire to strengthen the whole thing from back to front. In front is a large tree hanging down, much like a pole, into the ground as I built it, about a couple of inches. Let me read that again. A large tree hammering down. Wait a minute. The whole thing from back to front. In front, a large tree hammering down each pole into the ground as I build it. Okay, about a couple of inches. should a Bridger number 2 four coil be placed outside the cubby or in? Bait it, place lure inside and go. I've only trapped raps and coons before. Thanks for your help, Dan. Well, Dan, I don't see anything wrong with what you're doing. I think you're using a lot of energy, but before I tell you, I think there's a better way to do this. Let me be honest with you on something. Some of the best memories that I had earlier in my trapping career, when I would go out and do pretty much exactly what you're doing. It was out of season. I would get to go out in the woods. I would get to, you know, spend time out there. It would give me time to think. I really enjoyed doing the work. You know, it was getting me primed up for the next season. So there's doing what you're doing, maybe having, meeting some of your human needs, which we're getting ready to explain here in a minute even more, then you realize beyond just the trapping. So don't let what I'm getting ready to say keep you from doing this, because what you're doing is absolutely fine. Now, 2 to 3 inch diameter poles, depending on what they are, you know, you're probably going to get, you know, a couple, 3 years out of those, I would say, before they, you know, you have to go in and refix them. And if you're going out just because you want to have something to do to go out and enjoy nature, I mean, you know, knock it out. If I were going to build permanent cubbies, though, not saying what you're doing is wrong by any stretch of the imagination. If I was going to do permanent cubbies, I would get a small electric chainsaw or a small gas powered chainsaw. And I would make them where they, you know, the logs would be built like kind of like a log cabin, where they would be 6, 8, 10 inches round. And then I would, you know, you can take two poles as far away as the diameter of your logs and slide them down in there. And then, you know, you could nail them or wire them or whatever you want to do, and then make them really, really permanent. Those will probably last you, you know, 6, 8, 10 years if you do that, especially if you use something like cedar or Osage Orange or something that doesn't rot down very quick, you know, if you pick the wood that you're using. And that would definitely keep it going a lot longer. If I was going to go out and make a bunch of these, I would try to make them so they would last, you know, a decade instead of just a couple of years, because you're already putting that energy in there. Now, when I do the cubbies for cats, what I'm doing now is with wire. And the reason I do wire is because I can carry them with me. They don't weigh anything. They don't really cost a whole lot. And I can set them out where I see sign on each individual season. So it gives me a little bit more leverage. Now, the thing about a permanent cubby, which you can do that I can't do with mine, is you could go in, you know, after you get those things built, let them age a little bit. Then if you don't have a house cat, go find somebody that does and offer to clean their kitty litter boxes for free. You know, sift out all the droppings of that stuff and go in and start putting them inside of those permanent cubbies. And the cats will get used to going in there and seeing what's going on, and they'll start using it as their own marking station. So a permanent cubby definitely has an advantage when it comes to that. But the wire cubbies, what I'm doing is I'm just taking 2x4 inch wire, the cheap stuff I get at Tractor Supply. I'm taking a piece, and I don't know the measurements off the top of my head because I just kind of do it as I go. But what I'm wanting to do is the front of it, and it's going to be 4 foot long, the size of wire I'm getting. So you can get them in 50 or 100 foot rolls, and you want to bend it so it's like 18 to 20 inches tall and only about 10 to 12 inches wide. And the front is going to look like an arch when you bend it up. And when you cut them and bend them, the back will also look like an arch. But then what I do on what I'm going to consider the back of the wire, I take zip ties, 2 or 3 zip ties, and close it. So it kind of looks like it's 18, 20 inches tall in the front, and then it goes down to a point on the back. And the reason I do that is because in that particular shape, I can stack up 18 or 20 of those, you know, when I go trapping, and I can just pull the top one off, and then I can just throw crap on top of it and make my cubby wherever I want it. And that's more what I do. And but you know, if you're going to be trapping the same place over and over again, you want to make permanent ones. You know, by all means, there's nothing wrong with that. And the second part of this question is, should the Bridger number 2 fork hole be inside or outside the cubby? I say right on. If you were to drop a plumb bob or a string or a stick or a level, whatever you want to use, right where that the top of the cubby and the sides come down, we're going to say that's the very entrance to the cubby. I would want to have the trap to the right side and have the jaw right on that line. So it's going to be outside the cubby. Now, if you're building these big cubbies and you're in northern Missouri and you're not just going to be doing this early season, if you make your cubbies longer, say like 5 feet, then when the snow comes, think about the way the you know the average wind is, so you're not filling your cubby up with snow. Then you could set your trap inside and protect it from snow, which would be really good. So, you know, all these questions are, a lot of times it depends because of that particular reason. And then bait it, place lure inside, and go. Absolutely. If you've got these things built up, I mean, you're talking about really moving. You know, you could go as far as before season, you could go ahead and cable off. If you're not using drags, cable off with a long extension cable to a tree outside of it. So all you have to do is come in. You go ahead and pre-dig your trap beds, hook your trap up to your extension, scoop out where you've already dug out for the trap bed, you know, bed it, sift it back in, throw your lure and bait in there and roll. Now, you could put out a tremendous amount of cat sets if you were to do all this, you know, ahead of season. So I think you're right on track. You know, that's just several ways that you could do a cubby. None of them's right, none of them's wrong. They're just all a little bit different. And I hope you just rack them some of guns up, dude, and let us know how you do with this. So now, we're going to get into, I'm putting on my tweed jacket, my little smoking, you know, my little smoking jacket, my tweed hat, and I'm getting my pipe out. And I want to talk about something that is I think is important to trappers if they take this stuff to heart. Okay, what I want to talk about is focus, target, and human needs. And this is going to, like I said, this is going to, you know, get a little bit to the Dr. Phil side of things. But if you'll follow with me through this and then get away from your buddies, get away from the TV, get away from the computer, and have an open and honest conversation with yourself and actually mark these human needs down, what your focus is. And then you, trust me, if you'll go through this, you will understand why you like trapping and how to get more fulfillment out of trapping. And it, once you do this, then you will know the best way to go. So the way I want to start this is what are the human needs of a person? Now, every single person, no matter how, you know, how country or tough and rough and all that, I don't care how big of a bad of a man you are, every single human being has 6 human needs. And the order of these needs have a lot to do with the function of the person and the function of the focus and the target when they're doing something. And we're going to put this in a relevance to trapping so you can understand this. And it's kind of the why. You know, we're doing this the business course. I'm doing a bunch of research on stuff like this, doing this on the business course. We just did on our business course the why of having a website. And I'm sure after the guys watch that, they realize the why of the website is so important of what the results of that website are and why most people just kind of flounder around out there and their stuff never gets any traction. But why do you trap? What is the focus of your trap and what are the human needs? Now, there's 6 of them that seem to be pretty common with everybody. You too, like I said, no matter how tough of a man you think you are and you think you don't have feelings, you do. So the first one I'm going to talk about is certainty. Everybody needs certainty. You know, and it's why a lot of people get stressed out when they don't know what the fur prices are going to be. They don't know what fuel prices are going to be. They don't know if the laws are going to change. Certainty is just a basic human need. You know, you need to know that you got somewhere to eat. You need to know that you got somewhere to sell your fur. You need to know that you've got income coming in, so you're not going to be in a big trouble and lose your house. Certainty is just a basic human need. Now, the opposite and just as important of a human need is uncertainty. And it's kind of like uncertainty is kind of like the spice of life. If everybody knew what the fur prices were every single year and exactly where they were going to put the trap and exactly what kind of set they were and exactly what type of the water levels it was going to be and exactly what the competition was going to be, you would be bored out of your gourd within a couple of weeks of trapping. Too much certainty the human seems to reject because it's just boring. That's why you don't watch the same episode of a TV show every night of the week for your whole life, because you would get bored with it. Now, the other side of that is uncertainty. Now, uncertainty can be looked at in two different ways because there's always perceptions. A lot of uncertainty are surprises. Like for your birthday, you like surprises. For your anniversary and Christmas, you like surprises. If you know, you've got a friend or a family member that sends you something and it's a box, you know, you get excited. You don't know what's in the box. It's uncertain, but you get excited about it. Now, on the same time, we all like surprises, we think, until we don't want the surprise, and we call that problems. And it comes in a form of perception, basically, of how you look at things. And when you look at things in a negative way, it's going to change. It's going to make that uncertainty even more. When you look at the same type of surprise, even though you just don't know what it is, now you can be excited or upset about it when it gets there. But that uncertainty is what makes life life and what makes people people. And everybody needs that no matter what. Now, the third one is significance. Now, significance is, you can see this a lot, and I'm going to give you a really gross example of a significance here. If you're in the hood and a crack dealer comes up to you and pulls a gun and shoves it in your face, that person wants to be significant. And he just made sure, on a scale of 1 to 10, in your life, he is very significant at this moment. He's also very certain that he's going to get a response from you. And there's uncertainty because it's exciting, because he don't know if you're caring or what you're going to do. So there's three human needs that are met from a very shallow human being, because violence gets three human needs going on all at the one time. And that is the gross part of significance. We can see this, guys, when we look on Facebook and you see trappers that almost use verbal violence against other trappers. They are trying to get significance because they're screaming for someone to pay attention to them. So the more radical they are, they're trying to meet a human need. And they're certain that most people are going to respond. They don't know what the response exactly is going to be, so that's the uncertainty. And it's the same thing in violence. Now, significance, everybody needs some significance. It can be that you're a trapper. That can make you significant. It could be the amount of tattoos you have could make you significant. It could be that you're a Christian, or it could be that you're an atheist. It could be, you know, that you're a libertarian or Democrat or Republican. All kind of things make people significant in different ways. And people really, really fight for that significance. And everybody does it, including you. So don't think that you're special in any way. Everybody does it. But that's just a human need that you need to understand. So we've got certainty, uncertainty, and significance. And now this is going to make a lot of you very uncomfortable. And but don't let it be. The fourth one is connection and love. Now, since I know the word love on a trapping radio show is going to make a lot of people very uncomfortable, we'll just call it trapping bro love. You want to be part of the tribe. You want to feel like when you're talking to the other trappers, y'all are speaking the same language. Y'all have the same, you know, desires when you're out trapping. It's a tribal thing. It's not like a homosexual thing. It's just having a connection with, and it can be your wife, your children, your church, trappers, politics, it can be anything. But that's something that everybody's always going to strive for in some way or another in this connection or love. Now, the other one is growth. Humans have a need for growth. And when they don't have growth, things get really squirrely in their life because they're missing one of their main things that they have. And if you look back at some of the writings of people that started factories, I was just listening to a podcast the other day, and it was quotes from a guy that started one of the first real factories. And, you know, he was saying that, you know, we need an educational system that we can get people just smart enough to pull the levers and stuff like that. We really don't want them to challenge. And once he got into it later, he wrote a different book about factories, and he said it became very clear when you took somebody that was from a livelihood before the factory time where you would garden, you would hunt, you would trap, you would build your own house, you know, you would work on your own gun, all that variety in life, and we took that away from them and we have them doing one single thing in a factory, their intelligence goes down and they have a tendency to be more violent and they're very unfulfilled in their life. Well, there's no growth if you're in something that's just over and over and over and over again. That's too much certainty without uncertainty in a factory job because you know what you're going to be doing for the next 20 years, and there's no growth. So humans have this need to grow, and they have a need to learn. And when they're actually learning something that's important to them, they get kind of excited about it. They get, you know, they're really going on about it. So growth is a human need. And the sixth one, regardless of what someone says, giving is a human need. Giving is one of those things that the chemical makeup of the body sends off the same chemical reaction to a human being as someone that takes cocaine or heroin. It's the same chemical reaction in the brain that your brain does when you do that. So giving, just by whatever, whatever that is a need to have. And someone that never gives gets really screwed up in their own life because they're missing a human need. And if you don't meet these needs, you're going to have a very unfulfilled life. Now, why am I telling you all this? Because you can say, this has nothing to do with trapping, but I say, au contraire, it does. If these are our human needs, and we want to be a better trapper, my question is, what are you focusing on? What are you personally focusing on? Not on what your buddy thinks you should be focusing on, not on what someone on Facebook says you should be focusing on, but what should you be focusing on? What is important to you? But see, the order of these things in these human needs are different for every person. We've all met the person that is a daredevil. They put uncertainty at the top of their list, and they lead their life that way. You know, somebody that rock climbs or, you know, does a lot of the, you know, X Games and stuff like that. They put uncertainty at the top of their list, and that set a map in motion of where they go. Now, if you take that uncertainty away from that person, and that's the first thing on their human needs map, all of a sudden now they get very depressed. At the same time, you know, and I see this a lot in trappers at conventions, there's a lot of trappers that have certainty at the top of their list. They want guarantees that if they do something, that there's income coming in and what the season's going to do. And then, you know, they got to have certainty that they don't upset their boss at work because they have this going on in their life. And any type of uncertainty freaks them out. Well, someone that's, you know, a control freak on stuff like that is going to always have that at the top of their list. And there's a lot of people that put significance at the top of their list. You see this all the time on Facebook. You see it. It's really obvious when people try to get in the trapping industry and they sell stuff. They walk around like a gorilla beating their chest and screaming at everybody saying, look at me, look at me. And then when people don't look at them, they just get furious and they get very aggressive. They're putting significance at the top of their list. Then you have guys that just want to help other trappers out. They want to take kids trapping with them. They have these little groups where they teach kids trapping, and they're looking for a connection and love. And that's where they're putting at the top of the list on their trapping. And you have people that their main thing is they want to learn. They want growth. They got to have growth. They got to have stuff like that. And then you have a lot of guys that go around and they're always giving, you know, not just with money, but with time and stuff like that. And they're putting that at the top of their list. Now, see, every type of person that I'm sure in your mind, you can see somebody that met every single one of those. Now, here's where your focus comes in. What is your focus? What is your target? And what are you putting at the top of your human needs? Because if it's significance, it's going to be, I've got to catch more stuff to put on Facebook to brag. Now, see, I'm not even going to say that that's right or wrong. I'm just going to say if that is truly what you're putting at the top of your human needs list, that's going to tilt you towards where you need, if you're going to have a fulfilling life, you need to be able to go out and rack up fur and brag about it. And you need to have people to come up and pat you on the back and all that type of stuff, because that's going to really feel that, plus the connection part. If significance is all that you're interested in, and you can't ever really meet, you know, where people are always coming up to you, where you're the best trapper on this, that, and the other, and they're not always patting you on your back, you get very upset, and then you go into different things. But if uncertainty, our certainty is what that is, or significance, I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. If significance is what you're putting at the top of your list, just own up to it, admit it, and then that's the way you should trap. Trap for pure numbers' sake, so you're significant to other people. At the same time, it could be you want to be significant to other people because you want to help other people, which gets into the other needs. See, none of these are totally disconnected. But if significance is at the front, and giving is number two or three, see, that's going to be a lot different than someone that's significant, likes uncertainty, and then it's going to send you in this certain direction. I hope I'm making this clear the way I'm trying to, you know, explain this. You know, like to me, what really fires me up more than anything is the growth part. I love to learn. I love to tinker. I love to try new techniques. I love to try new locations. I love trying to figure out a different way to hook up a trap, to bed the trap, a faster way to do this. That's what turns me on. More than the significance, more than the certainty or the uncertainty, but the growth part is what turns me on. Now, there's a lot of trappers that are the complete opposite of that. They want someone to be able to tell them A, B, C, and D. They go do A, B, C, and D. And to them, that's meeting, they're more of a certainty type person. So that meets that need for them. And they don't want to experiment. They don't want to take a chance that they may lose an animal because they made an experiment. But see, mine is growth. Now, it could be that you're one of the guys that love the connection and the giving. And your significance is you want to keep trapping tradition alive, and that's your main focus. And you want to go out and you want to build this, you know, really cool relationship with your own kids or the neighbor's kids and all that. The reason I'm telling you all this is wherever you put these things at, and it's very hard. If someone really, it's really hard for someone to admit that significance is the main thing of their human's need list. You know, it's a tough thing to admit. But if you do admit it, now see, like giving is an easier one because you kind of feel good about it. Significance is more self-centered, and no one just goes around, I'm the most self-centered person I know. So that's where the honesty of this stuff has to come in. So if you're into growth, and that's where you're putting on the top of your lead, but you're trapping for significant reasons because you want to brag. See, there's a disconnect between your real human need and what you're doing. So if you're trapping just purely for numbers, but it's for growth, and growth is your main thing, you know, like me, like as I've gotten older, you know, to go out, I've killed 1,104 beaver in a season. to go out and kill 1,200, that just doesn't interest me anymore. I mean, it really doesn't. The growth part, plus I was having to make money to make a living back then, but the growth part to me is way more important, like figuring out how to use the portable pockets to catch beaver easier. That trips my trigger now. So I've learned by going over the self-studies like we're talking about today, that if I get out of the growth part of what really turns me on about the trapping and I go to something else, or if to me, certainty is not that important. It's just not. Uncertainty, I like a lot more. It's probably from the military where it's very chaotic and you had to be very creative on a day-to-day basis, especially when you're doing missions, because they always fell apart and you had to figure it out on the fly. That's kind of my personality. So the growth part and the uncertainty really go together. The connection part really goes together. Why do you think I put so much stuff out on Trapping Radio and Wolfer Nation? I mean, you know, sure, it's a way to gain customers, but at the same time, you know, you want to be and be helpful to the tribe. So, you know, there's a giving side of that. And, you know, and it always does feel good when someone comes, man, I really appreciate you doing the Trapping Radio. See, that gives me some significance right there. But with my own personal trapping now, growth is where I lead to. So instead of me going out and doing the same thing over and over and over and over again, I know for me to get the best out of my trapping, so I get the best experience from the trapping, I need to throw in some experiments and some tinkering and some different ideas. And I can do a lot of the more standard stuff, but if I don't have that, the growth part of me, it's kind of this conflict going on. So that's what I want you to think about, because you need to start asking yourself some question. Like, what drives you? You know, what really drives you? That's basically what those human needs are. What are you putting at the top of your human's needs list? That's what's going to drive you. Now, you may think that if you're a very certain person, that it's all technical type stuff, but I'm here to tell you, anything you do in life that's going to make any difference at all is emotion over technical. Emotion always rules, and emotion changes the chemical network of the brain when you're doing something, and it could be good or it could be bad. If I didn't push the limits on growth and trying new stuff, and I just worked on significance or certainty, I would be a miserable person. I would not have the best time when I was going out trapping, and it wouldn't work very well. So that's why all this stuff does. But the emotions of each one of those is what gives you the best time when you're out trapping. And let's face it, guys, that's why you should be trapping. Whether you're trying to make money or whatever it is you're trying to do, you need to enjoy it. Okay, now what is your mindset when you're going out? You know, this has a lot to do with how you're going to have a reaction with your trapping. A good friend of mine that I used to do a lot of trapping with, Ed Blue, he always uses the example. If I was a kid and someone threw me into a horse stall that was 4 foot deep with sloppy horse crap, I would be digging to the bottom going, I know my pony's in here somewhere. See, my mental state has always been that way. But we all know people that they work really, really hard at being mad. And they work really, really hard at being offended. And they work really, really hard to be grumpy. See, there's two totally different mind states. And I dare say one is not very happy, because you can look at these people that are always mad, upset, and offended. They're just not very happy people. And I don't want to be that. So your mindset also plays a lot into this. And I'm going to give a few examples. Fur prices. Now, they're low right now. Is that good or bad? Now, see, if you automatically said bad, well, why is it bad? Why does that matter? You need to go three questions deep on whatever you're doing. See, fur prices being low could be two different things. It's bad if you can't go get the price you want for them right now. If the price is good, and let's say beaver are very, very expensive, but you really don't like trapping beaver, but you go for them just because the price is high, are you getting the best you can out of your trapping? See, that's a question you're going to have to ask. You know, if it's something you really don't enjoy, but you can make money at it, is that why you're trapping? Is it just purely for the money? If it is, then, you know, that's fine. But, you know, you, as long as you come to terms with that. But if you're someone that, you know, is really into growth or certainty or uncertainty, and you're going at it from that direction, you're probably going to have some issues with it. Now, see, fur prices being low can be good. And I'll give you a few examples why. And this is why mindset makes such a big difference. When fur prices are high, if the money is one of the main reasons you're trapping, and you have certain things that are bringing more money than other, you focus on them, and you may, and if you're a growth type person, you may not play around as much because you know not all experiments work out, so you don't experiment as much, and you trap doing the same thing over and over again. And if you're don't really put certainty at the top of your sight map, basically, now you're fighting against your own personal needs in the way that your brain works. So that may not come out very well for you. But with fur prices being low, it can be good, because what if you're the years that it's high, you really do what you need to do to gain as much money as you can because you're doing something with that money that's important. Then low fur prices, I will use an example personally, like mink. When we have really low fur prices, I play around with mink, and because it's fun. It's enjoyable. There's a lot of learning that goes on with that. You know, playing around with cages and boxes and body grips and footholds and dry and wet and lures and baits and all that. Now, see, when fur prices are high, I may not feel like that is in my best interest, so I may not get to do what I really get the biggest kick out of, is go out and play around with some mink. So when low fur prices, I get to have more fun. See, that's a mindset. The same with the experimenting or anything like that, or going to do something that you really wanted to do that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in a good fur area. Well, I mean, if you just wanted to go, I've never seen a ringtail cat. Fur prices are in the tank right now. I've got a buddy that lives in New Mexico. I think I'm going to go down there for a couple of weeks and catch ringtail cats. Well, what do ringtail cats bring? Have no idea. Don't care. So you may not make that same decision during high fur price years. So it's all in how you look at it. It's been really muddy this year, I think, for pretty much anybody in the whole country. Is mud good or bad? See, it's mindset. Is it bad because you got to work harder? You got to always be constantly changing your traps out. You may get some misses. It's not fun. It's this, that, and the other. Or is mud good or bad? And I say it could be good because now you have the chance to figure out how to beat it. But see, that goes back to me being growth is probably at the top of my human needs map. So I look at that and go, well, I get to figure out a way to beat this thing. Let's get to work. You know, let's try this. Let's try that. So it's all in your mindset when you're doing these types of things. In you know, one thing that's going to be hard, especially if you don't have a lot of experience, is There's two always fighting things that's going on inside of a technical type occupation like trapping. That's the science of achievement and the art of fulfillment. The science of achievement is the technology, the techniques, the traps, the sets, the locations, and then the art of fulfillment. Now, the art of fulfillment is not science, so it's emotion. And emotion, and since you're a human, no matter if you think you're not an emotional person or not, you are, you will get more fulfillment out of that trapping if you start working for the art of fulfillment over the science of achievement. And that art of fulfillment is whatever you find is most important in your life, that's what you do in those orders. And then all of a sudden, starts working better. You know, and I would say that the difference between trappers that are very successful and not successful, in whatever definition that is those guys probably understand the art of fulfillment. Randy Smith is a good friend of mine. He absolutely, only thing that's in his mind is how many animals I can get in a truck on a day-to-day basis. Now, the growth part is not as important to him because he's got his system in place and he doesn't want to change it. He wants that certainty of that one set over and over again on certain locations, and he's got it down to the point where he catches a lot of fur, and his main thing is the fur. Well, when we get together and we trap, I want to play around, especially now. And, you know, that can cause a little bit of conflict. So you also got to think about what makes most trappers successful is they follow the order fulfillment. And if you're picking a partner, guys, make sure y'all are pretty much on the same page. Because if you're with somebody that's really big on just certainty and significance, and you're okay with uncertainty, and you're into growth or connection or wanting to take out kids, and it's going to slow you down on your trap line, you're going to have conflict, and you're going to be screwing with the art of fulfillment, and it's not going to work out very well for you. You know, there's some questions you need to ask of why you're not achieving, and I guarantee you it's because you're probably doing the wrong things in the wrong order. Decisions that you make from understanding stuff like this is what makes a happy trapper or an aggravated trapper or a gloom trapper or anything like that. I promise you it makes a big difference. So when you're going around, I want you to always think about when you start trapping, if you're still trapping now, tomorrow morning, what am I focusing on? Is it significance? Is it certainty? Is it growth? Is it giving? Is it connection? What are you focused on? What are you focused on right now? And now's the time, if your season is over like it is in a lot of the country, what are you going to focus on next season? Because the map, when you focus on something, it changes the map the way that you get there. And the way that you get there is understanding the map. Because if you follow the wrong map, you never get to where you're going because the map's wrong. So you don't want to do that. And I want to end the show on the three reasons that most people say they fail and they're wrong. And it's pretty much universal, whether it's trapping or business or family life or wanting to be a good deer hunter or whatever it is. Almost everything, it doesn't matter what it is, the three excuses that most people give, and they're not being honest with yourself, or they don't have the resources. And what I mean by resources, they don't have the time, they don't have the money, and they don't have the education. Now, for the most part, you may not have the money to get the traps of doing what you're doing, but you don't have a money problem. You have a money resourcefulness problem. So if money resourcefulness is your real problem, not that you don't have money at the moment, you need to figure out how to way to get some more money, generate money. If you don't have enough time, you may have to be a little more efficient. You may have to figure out a different thing to do in your life. If trapping is really one of those things that's concrete in your life and it's one of the biggest things in your life, and you've got a job that will not let you do what you get your most fulfillment out of, I suggest you start looking for another job. Now, see, that's going to be hard if you're one of your top things on your human needs is certainty. So if you automatically bristled up at that, you're pretty sure that's one of your top needs right there. And the other thing is education. And in the permaculture world, we call this content chasers. And you've got people that look at permaculture, they read every permaculture book, they watch every permaculture video, they read 20 different permaculture websites a day, they get on permaculture Facebooks, they get on permaculture Twitter sites. They're just content chasers. And they think that the reason they're not doing what they want to do in permaculture is the education. Now, see, trappers do the exact same thing because the excuse is I don't have the resource, which is education. And that is wrong because information is not education. And you have to, the only way you're going to be good at anything is through getting out and doing something through experience. So, but you can't do that by being a content chaser. So if you miss a coyote and then you spend the next 3 days trying to figure out every single person's theory in the world and why you missed a coyote, you're not gaining any ground from that, and you're probably going to be way more confused than it was. So it's not an education thing. You're confusing yourself because you're trying to look up way too much content. And so the education is usually not the reason. It's the lack of action. Or you're using the lack of what you consider education is being an excuse of why you're not doing what you think you should be doing now, because I've got to learn more before I go do that. Well, I don't know how to go out of state. Well, the best way to learn how to go out of state is, guess what? The action of going out of state. No matter how many people you talk about, it's going to be a different situation. So all the content chasing that you want to do is going to be pretty much irrelevant because it's going to be a different situation. So I hope you can see that. So it's not the education. It's not going to be resources, because if you really wanted to do something and you were resourceful, even if you had to get a second job that you didn't want to do to be able to do what you want to do, you could figure it out, or start a business, or go cut grass, or whatever you needed to do. It's all about choices. And the time, you have made choices in your life to whatever your time is at the moment and in the future. You have the choice to change that, but you've got to be willing to change it. So it's not those three things that stop people. It's the lack of resourcefulness to get around the perceived excuses of a lack of resources. And that is just, it's a shame, really. I mean, it really is. Because you don't know how many times in permaculture, if you've never seen my Instagram page, my gardens and farm does not look like most people's gardens and farms, and I don't have employees. I'd love to do what you do, and I hear that in trapping. I would love to go out and trap like you do, and this, that, and the other. Well, what's stopping you? It always goes back to the three resources. And then if you start digging deeper, it's because of the choices and not being resourceful on pretty much any stretch of the imagination is the reason they're not doing what they're doing. And it could be because they're so focused on having certainty in their life, which is, if that's the human characteristic of that person, there's no way that anything I say is going to change that. You know, so just keep all this stuff in mind, guys. I know this is a weird subject and a different thing, but let's think, why do I think this is important? Trapping can be a very fun thing, or it can be a very miserable thing. And see, back when I was doing a lot of the money trapping that I did, I was not following my personal needs site map, and it was only going, for one, I knew I had to have a name in trapping to be able to sell DVDs and lures. See, but that's not a big thing to me. You know, this may surprise a lot of people. If I wasn't selling anything in trapping, besides me going to conventions and just talking with people and having a good time, nobody would ever know who I was, and I would never give any effort for that, because the personal significance to me is not that high. From a business point, it is high. From a personal point, it is not high. And when I was being miserable and I put myself through all the stuff that I put myself through, it was all because of the significance of being a professional trapper and putting myself in a situation where that was my only form of income. And back in the early 90s, fur was cheap. So that was the choices that I made. But if I would have known what I've known now about how human beings work, I would have always figured out a way to have experiments going on just to make sure that I stayed level-headed and stuff like that. And that would have made a huge difference on the misery and fun scale of what I was doing at the time. I enjoy trapping way more now than I used to, and I don't trap near as hard now as I used to, but I understand what turns me on about trapping, and that's what I focus on. And you know, the part about the connection and the giving, and that's the reason I put so much time and energy in the Trapping Radio and Wolfer Nation and the YouTube channels and stuff like that, is because it means a lot to me to give. That makes me happy. I get the little, you know, when you put a piece of information out there and someone goes, man, that really helped me out. Look at what I caught, and I had my daughter with me, and or my son or my neighbor and all this, and we had a good time, just thank you. That makes me feel good, because that's hitting on the giving part, which is very important to me. And, you know, by doing all this stuff that I do, the uncertainty doesn't really bother me. So, you know, that's why is, so when you go out and you trap, try to figure out how to get your happiness level and your best art of fulfillment level at the highest of the scale it can be, and don't fight it. And if you do that, you will find out you will gain more experience and have more fun and enjoy trapping at such a different level that most people will never comprehend, because they're fighting the true self of themselves when they go out and they fight against their own human needs. And I think as trappers, what a cool way to go is if you understand this stuff and you apply this stuff and you're honest with yourself about this stuff, that when you go out, you have the most absolute best time you can in the woods. Now, to me, which is one of the goals of it, regardless how the money's looked at. So I'm going to go ahead and close the show. I don't know how long this has went. It's not been as long as it felt like going through this, because my brain's going 450 miles an hour trying to make all this make sense. But, you know, really think about this. And don't just think about this, guys, with your trapping. Think about this with your job. You know, the reason most people are miserable at work is because they're not doing something that meets their own human needs. That's why they're miserable. You know, they do it because they think they have to make a paycheck. And if you're only doing it for a paycheck, and say you're a giving person and you don't make enough money to give, do you see the conflict going on with that? Or if you're trying to have a marriage and one of your two people in the marriage is only concerned about the significance of themselves, you can see the conflict there. You know, and then once you kind of see these things, you can start making changes. Even if you had to go as far as to get therapy to do it, so you can have a good marriage, if that's what's important to you. How you raise your kids, how you educate your kids, you know, how you do anything in life, if you're out of whack with what you truly are, it's going to be miserable. And who wants to be miserable? I don't want anybody to be miserable inside of this. You know, I really don't. I think if guys were more honest, there would be less ADC guys trying to be ADC guys than there are, because when you really talk to them and stuff, they try to get significance through the ADC business, but that doesn't really meet their other needs, and you can see that there's a lot of conflict going on in their whole life and why it never really works out. And then you got some guys that's just right up their ticket for whatever reason, and they're doing the bats and moles and stuff like that. And their job is flourishing. It's not flourishing because they're a better trapper. They're flourishing because they're on the path where they get fulfillment out of what they're doing, and they're always going to do it better than somebody that's doing it for a wrong reason. And that's the reason I wanted to bring this up to everybody. And, you know, whatever it is that you're thinking about doing, think about these points. You know, put your maps in order. Write them down. You know, be honest with yourself about it. Certainty, uncertainty, significance, connection and love, growth and giving. And if you do that, things just get fun. And to me, that's the goal. Because what are you waiting on? Because the second quarter and what we're doing, guys, is dead. You only get one shot at this. I should have figured out a way to put this up. There's a TED Talk on Stitcher Radio talking about death. And it starts off, you only have to listen about the first 10 minutes of it. And it starts off, I'll tell you what, when I upload this, I'm going to try to get the first few minutes of that audio just so you can hear it. And it's called a Before I Die Wall. And when you listen to people and what they want to do before they die, if you really read between the lines, they're so out of whack on their own human needs list that the things that you would think would be very easy for them to do, they can't do because they're not even following their own map. So I'm going to try to get that up and see if there's a way that I can put that up there. If I can't and it's not on the end of the podcast, TED Talks is a podcast on that. I don't know how far back it is, but it's just called Looking at Death or something. Listen to the first 5 or 6 minutes and think about what it is. Because if you don't do this stuff, guys, what a waste of your life that you're having. If you don't have the most fulfilling life you can have, what a waste. What a gift you're throwing away. And I don't want anybody to throw that gift away. So that's why I brought this up tonight.
Those ideas adapted for radio from NPR. I'm Guy Raz. So one day, a couple of blocks from her home in New Orleans, an artist named Candy Chang noticed an old boarded up building that, like a lot of the buildings in New Orleans, had seen better days.
The city has some of the most beautiful architecture in the world, but it also has one of the highest amounts of abandoned properties in America.
This is from Candy Chang's TED Talk. And as an artist, Candy mainly mounts these huge interactive public art projects. Anyway, on that day, when she noticed that particular building near her house, something about it struck her.
I thought about how I could make it a nicer space for my neighborhood. And I also thought about something that changed my life forever. In 2009, I lost someone I loved very much. Her name was Joan, and she was a mother to me. And her death was sudden and unexpected. And I thought about death a lot. And this made me feel deep gratitude for the time I've had and brought clarity to the things that are meaningful to my life now. But I struggle to maintain this perspective in my daily life. I feel like it's easy to get caught up in the day-to-day and forget what really matters to you.
So that was Candy's state of mind that day, walking around her neighborhood looking at blighted buildings. And she started to think about how during times of grief, we could maybe find some comfort by sharing that grief. So she came up with an idea. Actually, it was an art project to help her cope. And after she asked permission from the town and from her neighbors and got a couple of friends together,
I painted the side of this crumbling house with chalkboard paint. And then I stenciled this wall, I think 80 times, with this pomade stencil I made that said, "Before I die, I want to..."
And then a blank space. Now just imagine you turn a corner in your neighborhood and you see that written on a giant building-sized chalkboard wall. And next to it, a bucket of chalk, practically inviting you to respond.
"Before I die, I want to..."
Did you, once you put it up, did you like just sit there and like watch it to see what people would do? Or like, did you see the first person who wrote something on it?
Yes, I did, because while we were still putting it up, while I was still stenciling the wall, people were walking by asking questions, you know, "What is this?" And a lot of people asked if they could write on it. And we said, "Yes, please do. That's what it's for." So, yeah, I saw a lot of people write on it. One of the first people was this man dressed up as a pirate, as you see in New Orleans, who wrote, "Before I die, I want to be tried for piracy." I didn't know what to expect from this experiment, but by the next day, the wall was entirely filled out, and it kept growing. And I'd like to share a few things that people wrote on this wall. "Before I die, I want to straddle the international dateline. Before I die, I want to sing for millions. Before I die, I want to plant a tree. Before I die, I want to hold her one more time. Before I die, I want to be completely myself."
The power of the "Before I Die" wall was that it actually didn't make people think about death so much as it made them think about life.
I never had any plans to make any walls beyond New Orleans. You know, I made this wall, posted a few photos online, and then it just spread like wildfire. And my inbox blew up with messages from people around the world who wanted to make a wall with their community.
And within a short period of time,
a thought-provoking public art project is giving people a sense of what it means to live life to the fullest.
Well, I got that up, and my question to you, what do you want to do before you die? Now, since this is a trapping radio show, what do you want to do before you die with your trapping? That'll get you to the right place. And I'll see y'all next week.